You're listening to Dropping the Gloves with former NHL All-Star John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. Well, welcome. If you haven't been here before, welcome to Dropping the Gloves. Not a very loud interview. I'm being quiet, Tim. It's nighttime. It's Tuesday night. The kids just went down. We just got back from a baseball party. It was just, you know, it's late. We had burgers outside. It was great. So we're being quiet. I'm in my wife's closet. We're going to be very quiet, very subdued, no yelling. I'm going to rely on these new fancy microphones we have. So, everybody, welcome, Tim Wurzberger. Great to have you back. How you doing?
Thank you, John, for having me. Sounds like you had a fun night. You're always doing fun stuff. The kids are just bringing you around and forcing you to interact with other parents. And
oh, no, I don't interact at all. That's where you're wrong. I go and other parents say hi, and I go, how you doing? And I keep on moving. I went right to the cooler, grabbed a drink, and I just sat there, and I talked to the two people that I knew already. And then I talked to my wife, and then I walked over by the kids and I said, hasta luego, let's get out of here. See you mañana. Have a good summer. And that's what that's how it was.
No sustained eye contact, no windows of opportunity to engage with you.
Well, you know what I mean? Here's my thing. I am friendly when I want to be friendly. You know what I mean? I don't like talking to people I don't know. And I know people there. I know I like them. I know I can to have a good conversation with them. If I see someone I don't know, it's like, I don't want to talk to you. I'm not that good when it comes to like being in a situation where I'm not forced to talk to somebody. If it's between, you know, a fork in the road between talking to a stranger and not talking to a stranger, I'm crossing the road. You know what I mean? I'm not talking to you. I don't know. It's just how I am.
The first time we met, you didn't want to talk to me.
Yeah. Still don't. But no, I do now that I know you, now that we have things in common. I know we could have a good conversation. That's one of my faults. It is what it is. Maybe it's because I just was forced to talk to people because of hockey for years and years and years. And then I know a lot of people aren't interesting. And it's just like, I have nothing to talk to you about. I'm here with my kids. I'm not going to be here long. We're not going to be lifelong friends. It's not nice of me. It really isn't. And I know it's a fault that I have, but you know, nobody's perfect, Tim. So, yeah, it was a good night, but I just, you know, I'm not making new lifelong friends every day, everywhere I go.
That's okay. You don't have to. You have me.
But that being said, if someone were to approach me, be like, hey, how's it going? Nice to meet you. This is my daughter. I would talk to that person. I would try to get to know them. I would try to strike up, you know, some, you know, similarities we have. We can chat and maybe we do turn into friends, but I'm not going to take that first step. You know, I'm not going to go over like, hey, old Tammy got a hit. Good for her. Her swing's coming around. No thanks. Like, it's funny at the baseball games. Everybody's in the bleachers. Everybody's like palling around each other. They like sitting close to each other. I go as far away as I can. And I literally sit in the outfield almost. I put the blanket down. I put my lawn chair down. The kids play in the blanket. I sit in my lawn chair and I watch the baseball game. Everyone must think I'm some miserable old man because I just cross my legs. I don't look at anybody. I don't try to catch anybody's eye. I just watch the game, take care of my kids, pack up after the game, collect my kids, and away we go. Coach is like, practices on Monday and Wednesday. I'm like, I'll see you at the game. We're not going to practice. that's what we did. We did one practice. We just did all games.
How many of those parents know who you are? Because I'm wondering, do they think you're just like some standoffish kind of, well, you know, celebrity, or think you're just kind of like a weird dad that keeps to himself?
I have no idea. I haven't talked to them to figure it out. I'm sure maybe they know. I don't know. I will never know. And maybe I'm the standoffish jerk ex-hockey player. And that's fine. I don't care. You know, I go, I watch my kids play ball, and then I get out of there. You know what I mean? I have enough friends. I don't need a lot of friends. I have like, I think 5 or 6 good friends that I talk to on a regular basis. Maybe that's enough for me. I don't need to be Mr. Popular. I live that life. I'm good with just a few. Well, I don't know. You're single. You're young. Do you go out and like got to meet as many friends as possible?
That's not really the attitude I have. It usually ends up happening, but it's hard. I mean,
you're so humble.
Well, when I moved to Traverse City, I didn't know anybody. I didn't have any friends. I moved here just knowing my aunt and uncle and my two youngest cousins, but I didn't know anyone. Everyone I met was either through work or like I forced myself to get involved in different things, like joining the men's Catholic group, joining the hockey league and the young professional networking group and just meeting people. And I've been here for 3 years. And I mean, obviously you and I are friends, but other than that, I have like one really close friend that I hang out with like on the weekends. That's about it.
You got two friends in 3 years?
Yeah. No, I couldn't even pull off one friend a year.
I guess a lot of your friends were worked up in your work and you quit. And so that's where a lot of your friends kind of fell.
All my friends most of them are back in Boston. So
do you talk to them a lot or no?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Through text and group chats and nonsense like that. But we've done a couple of like Zoom catch ups and stuff, but they're all home, but they're all like, I got two of them are married. One of them's got a kid on the way. They all have houses. And one of the ones getting married in December. And I'm just doing my thing out in Michigan.
So let's dive into that. I think that's interesting. We'll get to the hockey talk later. Do you ever feel the internal clock? Cause I know women have it. I've heard it. It's like, I only have a few years to have children. And I don't even have a husband, and it's just one of those things. Do guys get that? Because I got married fairly young. I think I was 25 when I tied the knot. No, was I 25 or was I 30? How old am I now? I was around 25, 26. Do you get that internal clock? Like, oh boy, not getting any younger.
It's not a clock the same way it is for women. Because I will say that, like, I'm 30 years old. You start dating a girl who's 30 years old and her clock is ticking. And that's like a thing. But for me, it's more about the pressure, I guess. Even just like, I don't know, not to be all cheesy, but like society pressure, like what's normal, what's considered, I don't know, like a regular path. And usually at age 30, most people want to be married or having kids or settled down.
At least divorced ones.
Yeah. No, it doesn't bother me. I have way too much of a good time doing my own thing and I don't get bored. I don't worry about it. And now just the right one will come along and I'm just going to keep doing my thing in the meantime.
You didn't sound too convincing, Tim. You know what I mean? I know you good enough. You want it. Yeah. It bothers you a little bit. It's okay. You can open up here.
It doesn't, obviously everyone wants to find that person, but no, it doesn't bother me. Cause honestly, I wouldn't have left everything that I left behind in Boston to come here if that was something that I was worried about.
You would have married a local Boston girl, just like the fighter, Mark Wahlberg, and she would have worked in the local tavern and you would have been doing pavement work, concrete work. It would have been just like every Boston movie, Good Will Hunting, The Fighter. Every movie, the guy is like a construction worker and the girl's like just working in the bar and, you know, getting hit on by creeps and you come and save her. There's still time for that.
Oh God, fingers crossed. I can only dream.
Would you go back to Boston?
I mean, that's such a broad question, but no.
Pretty specific.
No, because, okay, on what timeline? No plans to go back to Boston. If I moved from Traverse City, I would go somewhere else.
A little hockey talk. I just saw an article about Nick Ritchie. He obviously left the Bruins, signed with Toronto. Toronto made a couple low-key, like under the radar move signing Cache and Ritchie, and they're already talking about Ritchie being potentially a top six forward. Do you see this happening? I didn't watch him much in Boston, but he didn't look to me like a top six guy. Are they just kind of blowing him up? Like, he's a power forward. He's great. He's going to do great things. We're going to pair him. He's going to be our new Zach Hyman, because that's what they tried to do in Chicago with Bufflin being gone, not to this extent, but I remember when I signed there, everyone was like, well, we lost Bufflin. He was a big body. He played defense. He played forward. You're going to replace Dustin Bufflin. I had to like correct so many reporters and people saying, I am nowhere near Dustin Byfuglien. If you think this is going to be like one of these magic shows where the coach does something special with the player and he all of a sudden he unlocks all these skills that I have, you're going to be mistaken. Is this what's happening in Toronto where they think he's just going to step into Zach Hyman's role? Because I don't think he has the same skill set as Hyman, but like Richie, I don't know. Is he good? I don't even know him.
He definitely doesn't have the skill set that Hyman has. What he does have going for him is that he was a first-round pick. And I feel like that pedigree just kind of lingers. And GMs just hang on to, like, that potential and that sort of I don't know. It's a label, right? And he's a big boy. He's a big frame. I want to say 6'4". He's not afraid to fight. Not the toughest guy in the league, but he'll chuck him when he has to. And I think he can put up, like, a solid points. If he's – they're talking about putting him with like Matthews and Marner or like Nylander and Tavares or whatever combination they do. I mean, I don't know if he plays a role of like, I'm not saying he's this good, but like think of what Milan Lucic did to open up the ice for like Savard and Kessel or like Krejci and whoever else, because when he's throwing his weight around, he can, you know, pot a few ugly goals in front of the net and let the guys have room to do what they do, it can be an effective player. So I wonder if that's sort of the formula they're trying to replicate with Richie, with Matthews and Marner.
Yeah, I beg on Hyman. Not beg on him. Like, he signed a terrific deal for himself. He was a good player. You know, he is a good player. He does know his role, and he plays it to a T. I don't think Richie's quite that player. I don't think Kasha's that player. It'll be interesting to see how they fill out those top two lines in Toronto. And then in Boston – I don't know. And we've talked about this before. It's like, is Foligno going to fill that spot? Who's going to be that second line center? I don't want to get too in depth on this. I know we have other stuff to talk about, but man, I don't know. It's still surprising me that Krejci, who I heard has his name in the rafters already. I think they're already just working on the stitching and the lighting and where it's going to sit and where it's going to go. But you know, it's just an interesting situation in Boston. I think they're heading in the wrong direction by just losing that one player. It's so funny how missing out on one player and that one decision just affects the whole structure of a team so much, doesn't it? Because if you put him in the mix, you put him on the second line that pushes everybody else down, it just makes their lineup so much stronger. That young kid you were talking about, he's not ready for the second line. He struggled last year in the AHL a little bit. You give him a little more breathing room to grow and to develop, and don't put him in that pressure situation. He can grow a little more. It makes everything easier if he comes back. But it's just funny how one little decision, you know what, I'm going to go home and play in front of my family, in front of my friends, this and that. It just changes everything. Absolutely. Right. And the same thing happened with Chicago. I don't want to beat this point to death. If Marc-Andre Fleury does not go to Chicago this year, if he says, I retire, it's a completely different team. Now they're a Stanley Cup contender. If he's not there, they're not. They're maybe going to eke in with the 8th overall pick. It's just, I find that interesting that one player in a team sport, in a 20 guy, you're dressing roster, 23 guys on the team, one decision from one guy in the summer affects the whole just direction of the franchise. It really does. It's kind of interesting. It's like that butterfly effect.
Like, you're talking about, like, oh, Krejci being gone and who they're going to fill in. Do you think, like, do guys in the league or guys on that team, like, have their own ideas? Or are they, like, taking out a pencil and paper, like, filling out the lines, how they might arrange it in their head? Or are they just kind of doing their own role and let the coaches and GMs handle the rest?
Well, you have, I would say, little to no input if you're a player.
Yeah.
And you see it throughout the league. Like, I doubt McDavid has any input in Edmonton, and he's arguably has the most power in the whole NHL. He is, you know, the best player. He's in a Canadian market. He's all over Canada on every commercial, every this and that. And I doubt he has any input. Auston Matthews, same thing. Maybe Crosby has a say, but I doubt it. You know, maybe when Rutherford was there, they had a good relationship. He could get his input on players who he should bring in, but very, very rare do you have that kind of thing. One of the most interesting year-end meetings that I had was when I was in, where was it? I want to say it was Minnesota or Buffalo. It was early on in my career. And the GM, he asked all the players, like, hey, is there anybody around the league who you think we should take a run at? Is there anybody you know of that, you know, is not happy? Is there anybody who you think is getting a raw deal who is just not performing because it's that situation? And I said Dylan Strome. So it must have been after I was in Arizona, or I can't remember where it was. I don't know. Where did I see Dylan Strome? I can't remember. Chicago? Whatever it was. But I mentioned Dylan Strome. I was like, this kid's good. You know, he got a raw deal. He obviously hasn't produced yet. And the GM, I don't think any did anything with it, but maybe it was Stan Bowman. I can't remember. Maybe he did do something with it, but very rare to get that kind of input. It's not like basketball where LeBron walks in. He's like, I want this guy and this guy or else you're fired. And he's looking directly at the coach. So we don't have that kind of input. I don't think players want that kind of input, but to answer the other question, the guys do look at who you have in the roster. Now that I'm retired, I go and, you know, visit these teams sometimes, and I talk to the captain, the assistant captain, the guys who have been there a while, and they're like, yeah, we're gonna stink this year. This is not our year. And they're just being frank because they like no one's around. They're just being normal. And they literally are just telling me, yeah, this is going to be a tough year. We have all rookies. We have no good players coming in, and it's just going to be painful. And it's interesting to hear that mindset going into a season, because I knew going into some seasons whether we were going to be good and whether we were going to be bad. And it's tough coming to camp. Like when I went to Arizona, we were expected to be garbage. We had no stars really in our lineup. Our best player on paper was Antoine Vermette, who's a good player, but he's most well known for his faceoffs. Then luckily the rookies panned out with a Tobias Ryder and Max Domi, Anthony Duclair, Jordan Martinook, all these young guys. They really, you know, took another, they took to the game. And Oliver Ekman-Larsson had a good season, but gosh. And then it's such a difference going into a season where it's like, we're going to win the Stanley Cup. And I was on a few teams that did that. The Chicago Blackhawks was one. The San Jose Sharks, even though we finished so terrible, everyone was like, we're going to win the Cup this year. Like, this is our season. We got a raw deal last year. We got swept by the LA Kings after we were up 3-0. And, you know, we're going to come back and we're going to win the Cup. And it's just a cool kind of environment to be a part of when it's like, everyone was confident. Everybody just knew we were going to win. So, I don't know. But players do talk. You know, they see who we sign. They see who other teams sign. Like, I bet you teams are looking at a team like who signed a bunch of guys this year who just got a lot better. Like, the Leafs. Like, oh, these guys are juggernauts. They're looking at Boston. Oh, they, you know, they're okay. They're looking at all these other teams. Oh, the Avalanche kept everybody, and they got Darcy Kuemper. They're going to be tough. They're like, oh, Edmonton, we stink again. Like, McDavid thinks about that when he's talking to Draisaitl and Darnell Nurse. Like, he's like, how can we get any worse? It's painful. So, I don't know. Long-winded answer, Tim. That was a long one. You had enough time to go and get another beer.
Yeah, another beer. So,
what's the beer of choice at the Wurzburger household?
This is actually a Michigan beer. Well, it's called
Black Rocks.
It's from Black Rocks, called Micus IPA. It's really good. It's probably my favorite one right now.
I like the Black Rocks. I think it's called 5K or...
Yeah, 51K.
51K. That's my favorite Black Rocks beer. It's very enjoyable.
This one's better, I think. You should try it.
Is it an IPA?
Yeah, it's pretty new, I think. Or it's, it hasn't been... 51K is an IPA.
But it's not. It's more like a Pilsner or a lager. I am, like, getting old to where I just want an easy drinking beer. And I think I've told you this before. We need to get a beer sponsor on the show. Because
we used to do that back in the day.
I know. Like, I like myself some Labatt Blue Light. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, how about Danielle? we went on a little date the other night. I think we talked about it on the show. But so we like to have a drink before we go on the date. And so she goes in the party store. And I was like, just get me one. I don't want to go, you know, too nuts. Whatever. I just wanted one beer. And she comes out with a tall boy. That's like, how many ounces was it? I think it was 36 ounces. And I'm like, Daniel, that's four beers. Or no, it was the equivalent of four beers. It was like one of those massive Magnum in a can beers. Like, what is happening here? She's like, it's only one. I thought it was only two. So anyway, that was fun. But I don't know. Labatt Blue Light, that's my beer. What else are we talking about, Tim?
So I don't know. We've got a lot of questions. And basically the purpose of this podcast was just to talk a little bit and not talk about hockey, talk about ourselves or just whatever. And one of the questions we kept getting a lot of, and I know you've told this story, but it's been a while, like how the show started, because, you know, I can tee this up a little bit. Obviously everyone knows about the All-Star game. You retired kind of shortly thereafter. And I know you sort of got like a ton of job offers, right, from different networks and everything, mostly in Canada and New York. And then you kind of rejected all those and said, I'm going to do my own thing. Well, how did that all happen?
You just said it. What do you mean?
Is that it?
Well, that in a nutshell, I think people have heard this, and I'll try to get a little more in detail. But it was interesting. I think people saw I have a somewhat okay personality, and I was doing interviews out the yin yang after that. Like, literally, people would come to my house, and we would do an interview. It was funny. That winter, NBC Sports came to my house and they wanted to do an interview, and it snowed so bad they couldn't get up my driveway. All my neighbors were like, there's a massive like semi truck parked out in front of the neighborhood and it can't get up the hill. And it's got NBC on the side. I'm assuming this is you. And it was just, you know, it got out of hand. There's a lot of interviews, a lot of press, all this stuff that goes along with that big story. But anyways, after that, because I did some hits with Sportsnet, because I did some hits with TSN during the whole free agent thing in the summer, I was on Leafs lunch quite a bit. They did offer me, you know, a position. They're like, if you want to move to Toronto, we could make this worthwhile and you could be, you know, a part of the show. I don't know where we would start. You would start on Leafs lunch. We could, you know, you could get on TSN. You could have some hits on air, but mostly you'd start on the radio and we'd move you up. And that's what you see. Jeff O'Neill did that. Who else did that? A couple of the guys have done that. That's where they start. That's where they kind of get their feet wet and they move on their way up. So they offered that to me. It wasn't great salary. It was okay. The big drawback was I would have to move to Toronto. And, you know, I just put my wife through the ringer of an NHL career. We moved around for the better part of 12 years. And I was like, okay, we want some stability. So we didn't do that. Same thing with ESPN. I'm sure we could have done that. And they were sniffing. And everybody was just kind of interested in what I was going to do. And I just didn't do anything. I came back here and I just was like, I'm done. I don't want to be a part of that. I just want to check out. And that's what I did for about a year. And then my neighbor, who was your boss at the time, we just started chatting. We used to have beers in the driveway all the time, to the point where I had an old couch. I put like wheels on it and I would wheel it in and out of my garage. And we would just have beers so often regularly in the driveway. It was just, it made sense. Pull the couch out, lock the wheels, have a couple beers, hang out. And it was great. Well, he mentioned, he's like, you should do a podcast. And I had no idea really what podcasts were. And so he's like, yeah, come on into the office and we'll just play around a little bit. And so I go in there. I think the first episode, we just talked about fighting.
No, the first one was Where Have I Been?
Yeah. That's right. And it was just basically a recap. I think it had been a year and a half since I, you know, did anything. I wasn't big on social media. I didn't do anything. I had, like I said, been doing some interviews. I think I wrote a book. I was on that TV show. So it's not like I just curled up in a hole. But anyways, fast forward, we did that first episode. And then it was like a sporadic thing where I was like, okay, there was no set timetable. I was like, okay, that's done. Now what? And then I came in like 2 weeks later and we did another one. Then we did another one. And then we did another one. And then it just kind of snowballed. And I remember the first time it was real was when I interviewed Colton Orr. I was super nervous. I was like, what am I doing? Is this a thing or am I just messing around? And I interviewed him and it was fun. It was great. I think we got a lot of good feedback. And it slowly started to snowball after that. Then how did you come into the mix? Because I know I did it with my neighbor, who's John Aiken. We're not neighbors anymore, but he wasn't a huge hockey guy, but we had a good rapport where we just go back and forth. We were just buddies chatting. And I think I needed someone who knew hockey. And he's like, oh yeah, Tim in my office knows hockey. We should get him in here. And I don't know. You can probably elaborate more.
Yeah. I mean, I did this little, before we get into it, this solo episode back in November of last year, where I tell the whole story. If you haven't heard it, go back and listen. It's the whole story of how I got involved. And I think it's kind of cool, but just to quickly.
No, it's one of our bottom three episodes. Yeah.
No, Jonathan, very well. It was cool because like, obviously I knew who you were and I was like the prototypical hockey fan that hated your guts. And then totally went 100 miles an hour the other way after the All-Star thing and the Players Tribune articles and all that. And when he said that you were like in Traverse City and recording your stuff, and I thought, okay, I got to meet him one time. That'll be cool. And then, then I started like working a little bit more on your account and helping you build the show, arranging interviews. I remember doing Colton Orr, I remember doing Cam Jansen. Those are the first couple that we did. And then at some point you'd ask me to come on. And I was like, okay, I guess. And then, yeah. And then here we go. Like it happened more and more. And then we started recording multiple episodes a week and really pushing the social media and all that and kind of took off. And it's weird to think like how far we've come. And I know it's such a, you know, cheesy thing to say, cliche, but like what took us probably, or took you, you know, before I even came on, a year to hit a certain number threshold. We do that every month now. And it's just wild to think about, how far we've come, how much we've grown, and all the ideas and all the things we have planned. It's not going to stop. We're going to keep getting bigger. So it's fun.
It's funny. I don't want to get too big. I honestly don't. I'm happy with where we're at. Tim wants to grow this into like a juggernaut. I'm like, you know what? Let's just stay right where we're at. I like it. We had a small little podcast, nice little following. It's fun. But anyways, we Tim and I soldiers on. We had a lot of guys. We had Larry jump in for a little bit. We had that guy who was in the Army jump
Sam.
On.
Sam, he came on for one or two.
For a little bit. So we've had people kind of come in and out, but I think Tim and I are the lone wolves who have stuck around. But it's, you know, I still get uncomfortable during interviews sometimes, or sometimes I don't want to talk to guys and it's just painful, you know? And like when we talked to Sider, that was a tough one. He's just a young kid. He doesn't want to talk and he's just kind of goofy. He's a great kid. I'm sure we'd have a great time, but it was a painful interview.
I don't think so. I think it was good. I think that was a great interview.
My favorite one was David Backus. He was just, I think just because I have so much in common with him.
That was awesome. Brian Boyle was a standout one for me too. That was a great interview. Remember that one?
How could I forget? That guy was unbelievable. But yeah, it's been fun. It's been a good show. I'm glad we've done it. We're growing like crazy. Hockey fights, things are. I know people don't care right now. What else we got to talk about?
What besides one of the questions that we got a couple of times actually was, obviously you have the show, you do some part-time work, engineering, you have the daughters keeping you very busy. Do you have any hobbies that you kind of keep up with right now? Anything that interests you?
Oh man. You know, my house, it's funny how like doing renovations and fixing things and building things, it's become a little hobby of mine to where I'm like, okay, I got my tools. I got things getting better. You know, I have the essentials and it's just been fun. It's like, okay, something breaks. I could either hire it out or I could try to fix it myself. Like when the toilet filled up and it got backed up, I tried my darndest to fix that. And I was like, this is beyond me, but it's just little things like that. Oh, the roof needs that redone. I'm going to do it myself. Oh, we're going to build a pergola. I'm going to do it myself, which I built a pergola this past weekend. It's beautiful.
What is that?
You don't know what a pergola is?
No.
It's like a structure outside. It has like lattice on top, kind of chunkier, beefier. Then it has big posts and kind of blocks the shade. It kind of,
oh yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, we have vines going around it too. Eventually.
We're going to put lights up on the top and make it all fancy, but I don't know, not real any hobbies. My hobbies are my kids. You know, it's just people think I have all this free time and I have all this stuff and they do the same thing with my wife. It's like, no, like my life is like, after I go to like, we're going to press end record here. It's going to be 10 PM. I sleep for 5 hours. I have an adoration hour from 4 to 5. If you're Catholic, you know what I'm talking about. I get done with that. I have to drive out to Northport where my rental house is because the garbage hasn't picked up in 2 weeks. Apparently I just got an email from my neighbor saying, yeah, your garbage is kind of overflowing and nobody's picked it up for 2 weeks. What's going on? I've been paying for garbage pickup. I actually called last week. I have to go grab garbage bags, like probably 10 of them, put them in my car, drive them back to my house. I'm going to go to work after that. Then I have to go to the county to talk about getting permits so we can start digging for the barn because I want to get that rolling. That's just been painfully slow. And that's just all before 10 a.m. So it's just like, we have a busy life, so I don't have time for hobbies. Like it'd be nice if I could sit down like you and read The Great Gatsby while pondering my life. It's like, it's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
You know me so well.
Pretty busy life. So we do church, we do work, and I do the podcast. That's all I do. Those are my three things.
Sports.
I don't do sports. I don't do activities.
The girls. Yeah.
The baseball. Done. Thank goodness. That was also a pain. It's like, it's fun to see them have fun. Young kids' sports, painfully boring.
It is.
Any parent can tell you this. And then the one like positive is there's like one kid who's like really good who could catch and throw and hit the ball. It's like, man, that kid's good. You know, it wasn't my kids, but it was like the one kid who practices every day and like their parents really take it serious. Like I think I'm not doing my kids a service, or I'm doing them a disservice because I'm like, I'm not going to take you to the park and teach you how to hit. I should have. It was a tough July. It was a busy July.
Do you have any irrational fears?
What does that mean?
Like not afraid, like afraid of something that's not really realistic. Like, I don't know. You're afraid of falling off a bridge, even though you don't cross any bridges.
No.
Or any other fears?
I have honestly.
Anything specific?
And I'm being totally frank with you. No. I can't think of one thing that I'm scared of. And I'm not trying to be macho. I'm not trying to be, I'm a tough guy. I don't think I have that much thought process into things. I'm just like, I'm not scared. I used to be kind of easily grossed out by things, but now that I've had kids, I'm like, I do anything, I touch anything, I eat anything. I'm just like, and I think that's because you don't want your kids to see you A, be grossed out by things, or A, be scared, B, be scared, or C, show up. I don't know. It's just, I honestly don't. Maybe my wife would give you a different answer, but I don't think I'm scared of anything. I should poke my head out the door and see if she's there. But no, I don't know. What do you have, Tim?
I have a few. I have a top three for fears. The number three would be crocodiles/alligators. I've been trying to figure out the difference. I've read it 100 times. I still can't look at one and know which one it is.
Don't the crocodiles have a shorter, wider mouth and the alligators are longer, skinnier?
Probably. I know the crocodiles will see you in a while and alligators will see you later. That's how you tell the difference.
We can get that cut out. That's terrible.
I just feel like, I'd way rather face like a lion than a crocodile.
Did you tee that whole thing up for that terrible joke? Were you thinking earlier? It's like, I'm going to say this is going to get a huge laugh. John's going to love it.
We just had dozens of people just burst out in laughter.
No.
Second one is I'm afraid of going down like a slide and having like a little nail stick up and like gut me open like a fish. Imagine that.
No,
it'd be the worst way to die or get hurt.
I would never,
like a nail sticking up and just gone. You just gut it open like a deer. And
yeah, that sounds terrible.
Yeah. And number one is sinkholes.
All three of these things you'll never encounter in your whole life.
That's not true. Sinkholes come when you least expect them. That's the thing about them.
Well, yeah, you can say that you find something in the last place you look for it, obviously. Yeah, I never
imagine just sinkhole. You're just somewhere and the earth just swallows you whole and you're just gone.
I will never imagine that because I'm not a weirdo. This is the definition of like, you're stressing yourself out for no reason. I don't know.
You need to be way more worried about sinkholes.
I don't need to be worried. It can
happen anytime.
I purposely shelter myself off from everybody and everything just because I enjoy my life the way it is. Is that wrong? I don't think it's wrong. I got to figure it out. I don't need much. I don't need much, Tim. I don't even buy clothes. I just get stuff given to me and I wear it.
What's the next house project?
We got to build a barn.
Yeah,
I just got an email from the township guy. He's like, this looks like a house. This doesn't look like a home office because I was trying to zone it as a home office so I didn't have to partition off any land. I'm like, it is a home office. I'm going to work in there. But he's like, it has a kitchen and it looks like you're going to have like a shuffleboard in there. I'm like, it's a home office. So now I got to do a couple more things and pull permits and it's just going to be a pain. It's going to cost me more money. That's all it is. It's going to cost me another $1,200, $1,500 in permits and new drawings. And I got to get a surveyor out here to portion off to. It's just another thing for the government. Take their piece of the pie. This is my land. I bought it. I should be able to build a million houses on here if I want to. But no, I can't. Stupid government.
I have another question. We talked a lot about your college career and playing against guys like Backus and was like Vanek and
Pavelski, Zach Parise like and yeah. Thomas Vanek and Johnny Taves and all those guys.
Did you know those names while you were there? Like, were you game planning for those guys or did you kind of realize after like, whoa, I played against these superstars?
Well, a lot of the times they had already been drafted, right? Because you get drafted, then you go to college. So we knew Thomas Vanek. We knew Minnesota. I think they had the huge specimen. They had another tall defenseman. They had Thomas Vanek. They had Danny Erman. They had Troy Riddle. They had like a stacked team. Denver, Colorado had a few guys as well. They won like the national championship 2 years in a row. So, yeah, you know these guys. I didn't know David Backus just because he wasn't a highly touted guy. But, yeah, you knew Johnny Taves. You knew Zach Parise. They had Matt Smaby. They had a lot of high-end guys. And it was fun. It was the best division in hockey. I remember – my freshman year, I went and I had a good first weekend where I played well. I think I got an assist. The front page of the USCHO, it was like United States College Hockey Online. It was a picture of Zach Parise and myself side by side. And it was like, young players getting it done early. And I was like, yeah, buddy. And like, obviously our careers took off differently. He went on to like compete for the Hobie, and I just steady as she goes. But yeah, you know who you're playing against. Like it was easy to get up for games because we were the ugly, you know, redheaded stepchild in that division. And we played these juggernauts week in and week out. It was Minnesota, it was Colorado, it was Denver, it was Wisconsin. It was all these like national championship winning teams. And it was fun going into these buildings where they're like, who is Michigan Tech? And then we would get, you know, wiped out, but the odd game we'd win one. And it was fun. And it was good for me to develop. I got to play against a like really, really good competition at a time when no one really respected college. But now, like this year, Michigan had what, three guys drafted in the top 10?
Four in the top five.
Four in the top five?
Yes.
Shows you 1, 2, 4, 5. To draft. And they didn't even win the national championships. It shows you how much, like how good college hockey is when you get four of the top five draft picks and you can't even win the national championships. So there you go.
That's the thing too. When I see like conversation on social media about like you just being a plug or pigeon or whatever word they want to use. It's like, even, I mean, aside from the fact that you played in the NHL, like in normal people terms, you still played D1 hockey for your skill. You weren't even fighting at that point. That was based on your talent alone, was D1 hockey, right?
I got in one fight in college hockey on the ice, gotten a bunch off. I remember we played Team Italy. And we beat them, but they were playing dirty. They were like trying to low bridge us and take out our knees. I got kicked out of the game because some Italian guy submarined me, and I was pissed. I stood up and just started unloading on. We caught them on the street, and they were talking smack like, "Oh, you know, Americans, you think you're all." And we beat the junk off of them. Like I'm talking in the middle of the street, Team Italy. We're just dragging them through the snow, like just dummy. They didn't know what a street fight was. And we're like, we had guys from Alberta. We had guys from Ontario. We had all these like, just nobody cared. And God, I felt bad for that Team Italy. They must've gone on that plane, just beat up, broken. No, the cops came. They're like, what's going on? And we knew the cops, like the Team Italy running there, flapping their gums, you know, and that's what happened. And they learned, you don't mess around on the UP, baby. Like it was not even close. I still to this day can picture Brad Sullivan just knocking someone's teeth out. Like it was just, and you know what we should have did afterwards? We should have, to really let it sink in, was do the ole, ole. I wish we would have done that, but we didn't. It was,
I'm picturing like the outsiders, like the Sosas and the Greasers, just guys, just street fighters in the park.
It was literally outside of the gas station at like 3 a.m. like, 8-on-8 or 10-on-10. It wasn't the whole team, but it was the ones who were going out. And I was usually a part of that crew. And man, did they were not expecting us to like just start swinging. I'm not saying we didn't get the first jump. We did, but they, you know, they had it coming, those Italians.
Were they the same age as you guys?
They were much older. They were the Italian national team. So okay. They were much, much older. So they were, I would say they were in their 30s or late 20s. And I was like 20, you know? And we had a lot of guys who were, you know, 20, 21, 22, but we were in shape. We knew what we were doing. Like I grew up doing that sort of thing, fighting, you know, in the bars and stuff. So I knew exactly how to handle myself. I've had multiple times where I've had knives pulled on me and stuff. And a funny story, when I was growing up, this was later on when I was a little bit older. Kids, you might want to not listen to this story, but sorry. It's not that bad. I like was getting into a fight in the street and some guy pulled the knife out. And I'm like, this is the first time I've ever like had this happen to him. I was like, okay, what do I do? And I'm like backing up. I was like, do I run away? Do I like take my shirt off to like block it? I didn't know what to, I was like running through the Rolodex of like movies I had seen. Okay, what do we do? You control the knife. Next thing I know, my buddy comes out of nowhere and just suckers him from the side. And you don't pull a knife in a straight fight. And the guy just out cold on the floor. It was a great moment in my life. Because you don't do that. That's too much. That's when I knew it was time to stop doing that sort of thing. And I stopped after that, for the most part.
Only when needed?
Well, you know, only when needed. There was some times somebody needs to be, you know, get set straight. And I think that's good old-fashioned justice. And I'm totally full for it. Yeah. All right, Tim, is this enough?
What do you mean? Are you done talking?
I gotta get up in a couple hours. I gotta go.
I'm just
my wife
started.
How about my wife's outside playing violin? She's a saint. She's great. She just loves playing violin. She goes outside. We got a nice piece of property. She's out there just dragging the horsehair. That's what I call it.
You married up, John.
I did. Trust me. I know.
Do you think your girls will play hockey at all?
No. No.
Would you let them?
Yeah, of course. I don't think they want to. Maybe. This is things here, there's no options. Like, there's a girls' league. It's not that good. They have, like, they have to drive all over the state to get games in. It's not like they have five or six teams in the house league here where you can just play, or there's a competitive girls' league. So I don't know what I'll do. They're getting to that age where I got to start getting them to sports. Like, they're 7 and 9. It's like, ugh, it's time. I wanted to do something, but it's just like I'm lazy. I'm just lazy. I got someone, like, I got to get them into golf. That's one, and I got to get them into something else. Baseball's fun, but I don't really like it.
Would you, if they started taking hockey seriously, would you get into coaching?
Yeah, I would. I think it'd be fun. Danielle, come here. Come here real quick. We'll ask her if I have any fears.
Oh, yeah. I have a million questions for her.
Well, it's an interesting question, and I don't know if I'm getting – Daniel, say hi.
Hi.
So we were talking about Tim for some reason wanted to know if I had any irrational fears. And he said his irrational fears are like getting eaten by a crocodile and like going down a water slide and hooking himself on a nail and going through a sinkhole. Like, that's insane. Yeah, do I have any irrational fears?
Let's just see the look on her face.
Rodents?
Well, I don't think that's irrational. We have mice. I'm not scared of them. I don't know.
I'm you have
bad dreams about them.
Because they ruin my life. So we've been having issues with mice on the property.
Hold on.
Before that.
What? You're having nightmares about the mice?
One dream I had of a mice crawling on me.
Danielle, so, I want to hear Danielle's side of the story.
He like wakes up like scrambling, patting the bed because he thinks there's mice in the bed. He's just, yeah.
Yeah, one time I had a bad dream about a mouse crawling on me. That's not an irrational fear.
I don't know.
So hold on. John, did you think of that and didn't say it, or you didn't remember that?
I don't think that's an irrational fear. I'm not scared of mice. I kill them all the time, like with my hands and feet. I step on them. I grab them. I kill them all the time. I'm not scared of a mouse. That's not an irrational fear.
Sounds like you're a little scared.
I'm not. No, I don't like mice. I don't.
Danielle's thinking. What else does she have?
Someone breaking into the house, I think, is irrational a little bit.
I'm not scared of that. I'm cautious if I lock a door. You guys are nuts.
I'm not irrational. I wouldn't say you have any irrational fears, but those are.
Sorry, I don't want my family to get murdered. And then I don't like mice in my house. Oh, I'm so crazy. You guys.
Yeah, if you're waking up like in the middle of the night sweating from a little mouse on your bed.
I wasn't sweating. I had a bad dream about a mouse crawling on me. So what? And it might have been real. I don't know. It was dark. We have mice issues. I took care of it. I must have killed, not even exaggerating, since we've moved here during the construction phase, 2 dozen mice. Now, I haven't seen one in my house since. It's been great.
I killed one the other day.
Places. Huh?
I killed one the other day with a trap, mouse trap.
Your house is very, I think your house is going to fall down. Every time I walk up those stairs, I'm like, this is dangerous.
Well, okay, it's not my house, though. I live in an apartment. I would never live in a house that was falling apart.
Your apartment is falling apart. You need to get a house. Housing prices are very high, though, Tim.
I know. I'm looking.
All right, let's wrap this up. No one cared. Everybody's not listening anymore. I got to go. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We will get to more hockey talk on Friday. Who are we going to have on the show, Tim? Very exciting.
We have Ryan Graves come on, who's the defenseman from Colorado who just got traded to New Jersey. So it'll be good to get his take on what's happening in Colorado, their playoff runs, and what he's looking forward to for the Devils. So that'll be a good one.
Yeah, big body, 6'5", going to add a big chunk of size to that team. We'll talk to him. Well, although they've had some big signings in New Jersey, getting Dougie Hamilton, kind of turning that team around. And I want to get the insight on Colorado. What was that like? All the pressure, all the expectations, and kind of the letdown. What it was like in the locker room playing with those guys. Do they talk about a salary? Do they talk about why we're not paid more if we need more? Nathan McKinnon just had an article came out about him, how intense he is in the locker room. It'll be interesting to get his take, see how open he is to some questions. Yeah, I don't know. He's a young kid. Maybe he doesn't want to, you know, open up the box a little bit too much.
He was excited to come on, so I bet he'll open up a little bit. So hopefully, well,
why wouldn't he be? We're one of the top 100 hockey podcasts in the country. It's beautiful. We're doing great. We're really doing great. On that note, we really appreciate everybody's support. Go hit the like button on the screen, and we will talk to you guys with Ryan Graves on Friday. Cheers, everybody.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode. Delivered by DoorDash.